Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. This is Dorian, and as always, my lovely sister Vanessa. I know, I forgot.
How the fuck are y'all?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, for new listeners, people just tuning in, if you are sensitive to strong language, you might want to turn the volume down.
Turn it down. You may want to turn the shit off is what you're actually trying to say. If y'all can't stand it, turn the shit off because I don't care. This is the nature of having your own show. You can say what the fuck you want, when the fuck you want to say it, how the fuck it's going to be. Did I make it clear?
Yeah, that's perfectly clear.
Give your shout out because I got a shout out to give too.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I gotta give my shout out to my cousin Jessica. If you're listening already, I'm gonna send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. Love you, Jess.
Love you, Jess. Okay, I want to give my shout out, and this is gonna turn into a thing I can tell. I want to give a shout out to the wonderful band that is the Dragon.
Really?
I had it and then I fucking lost it. I want to give out a shout out to our friends, Witch Doctor Utu and the Dragon Ritual Drummers. I want to give a shout out to them. I love these boys. I think they're hilarious. They were kind enough to give us a shout out on Wednesday when they were over on Hex. So I'm going to do a perpetual shout out for my Dragon Ritual Drummers. Huzzah, huzzah. I love them bastards. Anyway, so it's fucking Friday.
And I gotta give a shout out to my boyfriend who I missed, you know, that my secret boyfriend, don't tell anybody, but Drago. Drago called in like just as I hung up, so I'm sorry, Drago, I didn't get a chance to talk to you. But
we love you. We love you.
Yeah, we love you.
We love you. And call in. You can call in on our show even if you're not the guest, guys, so don't be afraid. Feel free to tune in and call in. Because we will talk to you bastards. We love you. You are just a band of beautiful boys. We love you a bunch. Anyway, okay. So part two, we are now into segment two of What the Fuck Happened to Raina with this fucking crazy asshole at work. Okay?
Yeah.
If anybody was listening last week and heard me bitch about someone expressing a racist attitude that I work with, that asshole made things even worse yesterday by going off on a toot and trying to get a rise out of me by having an onslaught of a racial commentary. And this is not a black-white thing. This is against everybody thing. I guess he's trying to show me that his bigotry is all-inclusive, amazingly enough. This fuckwad is eventually going to trip himself up in front of somebody of importance and get his happy ass fired. Now, the thing is that I didn't want his happy ass to get fired because his wife is about to have a child. and I didn't think it was fair for me to cast my dispersion, even though he brought it on himself. I didn't think it was fair to usurp an entire family for one fucktard. However, considering this jerk-off has not learned his fucking lesson, I'm asking my friends to throw a little energy that justice be done and that this fuckwad has to go look for work elsewhere. Because I don't have to tolerate sexism, I don't have to tolerate racism, and I'm a white bitch. I could, you know what I'm saying? It's not like I can even say I understand the struggle. I got white bitch struggle. That's a totally different type of struggle, and I can't even compare it to the struggles of other people. So I'm not going there. But what I'm saying is, I don't have to tolerate anybody treating anybody like shit, whether it's a sexist thing against gays or women or whatever, or a racial thing or an ethnic thing, which, as we know, are not the same thing, but people get that shit confused. That's all right. We're here to teach you. Anyway, well, I'm just saying. So, you know, I'm finally at a point where I'm about to ask for justice to come on down. So, y'all join me in that. Do me a little karma, a little step on the gas with that karma deal, if you would, and give me a little pump up here, because this bastard is going to have to figure out that, guess what? Your racist bullshit attitude is not welcome. This is the 21st fucking century, and you white men with your thumbs up your asses who are looking down at everybody else, y'all need to go. Y'all need to go, because it's bullshit. We don't have to put up with it.
If you think about it this way, maybe, you know, okay, this is my theory. It's like, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to shut my mouth to that. You know,
okay.
I don't care who it is. I don't, me personally, but, you know, then again, I don't currently work in the corporate world. So
right.
I don't have to watch that aspect. You know,
yeah.
But it's like, I don't care who it is. You know, I hear something ugly coming out of their mouth. It's like, no, that's not acceptable. And I think the more people do that and the more consequences there are for behaving that way, you know, I mean, hey, you may help his kid, you know, by him biting his tongue and just keeping that ugly crap in his head.
Well, here's the thing. He is not the type of person smart enough in the first place to have kept that crap in his head. And because, quite honestly, yesterday when I thought, okay, maybe we're getting over it, maybe he understands that he can't say that kind of shit. Oh, no. He did the total opposite and decided to do a whole written... he just kept putting his foot in his mouth purposely to bait me. It was a personal thing at this point. And I'm not falling into the trap. I am just not falling into the trap. So... if anybody would like to throw a little fucking energy on that to get rid of a racist asshole, I'm right there. So come on with me, because that's bullshit.
Yeah. You know, I'll lend some energy to that.
Thank
you.
Know,
I mean, it's just, in today's day and age, it's like, you know, just stop. Just stop. You know, I mean, I understand we fear the unknown. We don't, you know...
There's no unknown anymore. No, see, that's bullshit. There's no longer, that's not an, if you're dealing with people, there's no longer an acceptance or a tolerance level for that kind of bullshit. We're not all living in fucking caves and we've never seen fire before. I'm sorry. If you come into the real world and be a part of it and understand that the shit your daddy told you just ain't working anymore. Not that it even worked then, you know. I mean, it's just getting me riled up, and you know me. I get a heat on for stupidity.
Well, it's just, you know, you can't really wrap your head around it. It's like, seriously, you seriously think that? People seriously think these things, and it's like, I don't understand. But, you know, I was talking to my dad the other day because my boys have, you know, spring break this week, and it started yesterday, so he came by to get him. You know, and he was talking about, you know, where he lives, and it's a rural county here in North Carolina, and, you know, it's like we've run across, I don't know how many people who have never in their life, I mean, senior citizens that
yeah.
have never even been out of their town.
Oh, yeah.
County.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people. They just, they stay where they're born, they die where they're born, and they don't need to know anything about the outside world, and they're good with it. And I think it's crazy, but that's, you know, my opinion. Whatever.
Yeah, I think it's
sad. Well, it's not sad if that's what you've expected out of life and that's all you're looking for. I mean, there are people who are perfectly content to live and die where they're at and never see or do or experience anything else. I mean, I think it's weird. You think it's weird. But
yeah.
Apparently not everybody thinks it's weird. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm weird. Well, that's beside the point. Shut the hell up. Anyway.
As long as they're happy, you know, I guess that's all it boils down to. As long as they're happy, it doesn't matter, you know.
Well, I think it breeds ignorance and stupidity.
I do too. But, you know, it's the more we get into the technology, you know, the technological age, and you know, we reach out to people, and we could talk to people across the world, you know, and have friends in you know, Australia and Africa, and we can learn about their culture straight from the source, and they can learn about ours. You know, I think it's kind of, you know, breaking down some barriers, but it's just, you know, we got to wait till those, I know it's going to sound mean, but we just got to wait till those old fucks die off. And, you know,
that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Waiting for some old motherfuckers to just drop dead. I'm good with that. See, I know I shouldn't be because I'm about to be an old fuck myself. But you know what? I don't care.
There you go.
I just don't give a shit. It's like sometimes, you know, you gotta just deal. It's sad, but it's true. Some people are just too stupid to live. And they shouldn't be fucking breeding. I'm sorry. I know how that sounds, but some people should just not breed. You know, I know there's a certain aspect of to each their own, but by the same token,
around.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. It's like, you know, at least if there's just two of them, they're kind of contained. But, you know, then they start spreading. You know, and it's like, you know, there's not a bottle big enough of, like, anti-lice to, like, fucking get rid of them. You know, or just, I don't know. I mean, you know, some people, actually, yeah, I take back what I said before. It's not sad. Just stay in your town. Don't bother me.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying. Motherfuckers, if you're going to be an ignorant bitch, be an ignorant bitch on your side of the fucking street and leave my happy ass alone.
There you go.
I'm just saying.
I try to approach it from a nice aspect, but you are pulling me closer and closer to your circle.
To the dark side. That's right.
I just snapped at a friend of mine. I mean, I've known him for years, but it's like, you know, he can get a little snippy, you know, if he gets a certain thing in his mind, and it's like, I'm sorry, but, you know, we are having one of my friends on, you know, a gentleman I know, and he's a meat maker, and, you know, not that I mind you, you know, posting links to you know, meat and whatnot, because I love meat. I wish you had sent it to me before, but, you know, don't go advertising for somebody else while I'm trying to promote somebody. It's like, I tried to be nice about it, and then he got snippy with me, and it's like, you know what? No. Before, I would have been like, well, I wasn't trying to be. It's like, no, don't get snippy with me. My show.
Hello. Thank you.
In the show link. That's all there is to it.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Some bitches are just going to be not so bright.
Nah, it was a misunderstanding, and it's like, I'll talk to him after the show, but it's like, I'm not mad. It's just like, dude, seriously, how long have you known me? Don't take a tone with me. Don't.
Maybe he's not playing.
The older I get, the less willing I am to put up with it. It's like, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. Zip it.
So let's see. Who am I crazy about this week? Okay, this week, specifically Bieber. Today.
You got Bieber
who?
Fever? You got Bieber fever?
No. I am loving on Jim Carrey today.
Mm.
Jim Carrey. And I am not a Jim Carrey fan, but you know what? I am today. Because he went after Fox News. He did a musical parody against gun violence, and Fox, in their infinite stupidity, took him seriously. And they're like, well, this is just ridiculous. And I'm like, no, you are. And he's like, so he attacked Fox News, so I'm good with him.
Yeah.
I'm like, go on, Bobo. Tell them how it is.
Yeah, because I haven't heard what happened. I heard it was something cold, dead hands, but I haven't watched it here yet. I know people were, like, freaking out. All, you know, not all of them, but, you know, a couple of my my Christian friends were, like, posting and, you know, anti-videos against Jim Carrey, and it's like, oh, so he must have said something liberal. Okay, I'm okay with that.
Go on with you, Jim. That's right, Boo-Boo. We'll take you in. That's okay. I'm like, ridiculous. Ridiculous. What'd you say?
Possibly get me in trouble. And this is so bad. Somebody posted on their wall a picture of the Pope and then Woody Allen. And I didn't really correlate the two. I knew he looked familiar, but yeah, he totally looks like Woody Allen.
Oh, my God, he does. That's scary.
They posted the link, and I don't know, somebody said something, and my reply was, well, at least Woody Allen married the child he molested. I was like, that was...
Oh! Shut up! Whoa!
I'm telling you, your meanness is rubbing off on me.
Too fucking bad. It's awesome. I love it.
It's like, I am channeling my sister right now. But that, I got to pat myself on the back. That was funny.
That's pretty awesome. I will take full and complete credit for that. No worries. I'm good with that. I think it's hysterical, but I'm good with that.
I haven't been defriended yet, and somebody liked the comment. So it's like, okay, I'm good. I'm good. She's not going to get mad.
Nah, fuck that. You're funny as hell. Oh my God.
Wow.
You.
I know, you know what we've been missing though too? You
what?
Haven't been watching your trash TV.
You know, I haven't. You're correct. I have not been watching my trash TV. I have been busy busting my ass, working like a bitch. And quite frankly, I have not had time for my trash TV. Shame on me. I really need to get back into the groove.
I need to get back.
You're saying?
No, I was going to say, because I don't have cable, and I've heard people talking about this Duck Dynasty thing.
God.
I'm going to put that on your list. I don't care about no Honey Boo Boo. I want to hear about this Duck Dynasty.
Well, here's the thing about Duck Dynasty. All the fucking morons I work with watch it. So I'm really reluctant to, like, even bother with it because I'm thinking it's going to be all Republican right-wing bullshit. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. No. Seriously, somebody correct me if I'm wrong because... I will take the clue and watch it if we can prove that I won't throw up in the first 20 minutes. Just saying.
Yeah, you know,
saying.
That's why I don't watch anything. I mean, it's like I watch PBS. We haven't had cable in, God, almost 4 years now. And it's like I really
it's been a while. Yeah, you're not missing much. Trust me, you're not missing much. I mean, I'm a vidiot. I have to have TV only because, well, that's who I am. What can I tell you?
Don't get me wrong. I went through withdrawals because for most of my adult life, you know, I've had cable TV, and it's like even if I'm not watching it, it's on in the background. You know, now it's like, you know, I can watch my shows whenever I want, you know, because there's, let's see, Netflix, and we've got Roku, and all kinds of stuff, you know, so I don't really miss much, you know, and we catch up on like, Walking Dead and Game of Thrones, which is coming back on Sunday.
I'm so excited. I am, too. It's, like, my favorite thing. Well, one of them, anyway.
I am like, somebody, please gut that little bastard Jeffrey. Oh, my God.
I know. I totally agree. I can't wait until they figure out when his demise is because I just can't stand that little bastard.
Oh, Karen in the chat room said, Duck Dynasty is actually kind of amusing in a Swamp People meets The Apprentice sort of way.
Oh, you know, I have to tell you honestly, I can't bring myself to watch The Apprentice because anything having to do with Donald Trump at this point is a non-starter. I can't do it. I can't. He nauseates me beyond words. I can't handle the Trump.
Yeah, we need to dump the Trump.
Dump the Trump. Hilarious.
I don't like looking at his face. And, you know, it's like, is it me or is he, like, really seriously getting redder in the face as the years go on? His blood pressure
getting
through the fucking roof.
I have to agree, little sister. I have to agree. He's a loser.
Yeah, well, and he's always angry at somebody. It's like there is not a time that I see this mofo that he is not yelling about, you know, Rosie O'Donnell or this or that. I don't even know what he's angry about. It's like it doesn't make sense. It's like, oh, my God, just shut up. Shut up. Him and Rush Limbaugh and Catherine Coulter, you know, just go away. You know, live your lives in peace and leave us in peace. We don't want to.
Are you talking?
We don't want to hear your.
Are you?
Shit.
You mean Ann Coulter?
Yeah, whatever the fuck her name is. Skeletor's sister.
Skeletor, there you go. That's her.
Yeah. I can't.
That's
stand her.
Her.
Yeah,
I can't
it's,
either.
It's like, God. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Whatever. I could go on and on.
And we will. Trust us. We will go on and on. Trust us. We will talk about this until the cows come home.
I'm telling you.
But, okay. All right. Anyway, it's guest time.
Yay, guest time.
Guest time.
Off a horse, hello. Ah, come on. Go. Off.
Well, watch.
Off mute. Hey, James. Hello? Oh. You know what? I just put my sister.
Oh, for God's sake. I can't trust her with a mute button. I can't trust her with anything. Do you see what the hell happens on this show? Seriously,
you can smack me later.
I probably will. Anyway, this is James. James, introduce yourself to the folks and tell them the name of your company.
Hey there. This is James Lindenschmidt. I don't really have a company per se. I run a website called bardicbrews.net. And the main purpose of that site is to talk about mostly mead, but fermentation in general. I'm a home brewer. I make my own mead, and every recipe that I make goes up on the website. I detail what I do, and I use, you know, different ingredients. I'm really into, like, local seasonal ingredients, mostly that I get out of my ecosystem whenever I can. And, there's all kinds of recipes on there and some musings about me, things like that. And I also have an ebook on the website that talks about, shows you how to make your mead. I've got it sort of, pardon the pun, distilled down to a pretty simple process that's just really 6 steps, 2 of which are optional. And it's sort of a framework on how to make mead. And, the thing that I like about it and that I try to do with it is to sort of demystify the process, because I think a lot of people, you know, look into how to make mead and they think it's really complicated, but it's really pretty simple. It's really simple. And the method that I have allows you to do anything from making just a very simple, basic, plain mead, you know, we would call that a traditional mead, to adding just about any ingredient that you can think of to your mead to really sort of make it your own.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Now, do you use, like, local honey?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing about mead is when you're making mead, generally there's very, very few ingredients. I mean, at its bare minimum, you know, you're talking honey, water, and yeast. That's all you need to make mead.
Yeah.
So the quality of each ingredient becomes really, really important. And that's particularly true with the honey and also the water. We'll talk about that in a minute, I guess. But with the honey, it's sort of problematic now, because there's a lot of people know that, you know, our bee population is sort of in crisis, and it has been for a few years. So we have you do have to be careful about the honey that you're using. And I always say that the best possible honey you can use for your mead is honey that was harvested skillfully and responsibly out of your local ecosystem. What I generally recommend is, and plus, I mean, you know, to make mead, especially once you get into it, you're going to go through a lot of mead. I mean, I use probably anywhere between a half gallon and a gallon of mead per batch that I make, and I make 3 gallon batches at a time. So I'm going through, on average, probably, you know, maybe 15 gallons of mead per year, just as a home brewer.
Wow.
Yeah, so it goes quick. So really, in some ways, the hardest part of mead making is finding a good source of honey. And, you know, so generally what I recommend is just, you know, ask around. Go to a local health food store. Chances are they have some local honey, and find out where the honey maker, where the apiary is. That's what you call somebody who makes, you know, raises bees and makes honey. And, you know, get in touch with them and go and scope them out and talk to them and find out. And, you know, in my experience, if you've got a local beekeeper that is into it, they will love to talk about what they do with you. And especially once they know that you're taking it seriously and you want to do cool things like make mead with their honey, they're in general more than happy to talk to you about it. So finding a good source of honey is really important. And, you know, and as you get into it, you know, you'll find there's different varietals. You know, there's wildflower honey, and one of the people that I get honey from up here in Maine where I live is he has this raspberry honey, where basically the beehive is in the middle of a huge raspberry field. So the bees go and they get all the nectar from the raspberry plants. And sure enough, the honey that comes from that, you can taste the raspberry in the honey. It's so cool. So you can find all these different varietals. There's clover honey, wildflower honey, anything you can imagine. You know, some of the best mead in the world for me making comes from Scotland, and it's heather honey. Where the bees get the heather. One of the things that I like to say about mead, it's sort of a catchphrase that I came up with a while ago, is that mead is the highest alchemical expression of an ecosystem.
Ooh.
So I'm going to repeat that. Mead is the highest alchemical expression of an ecosystem, because it starts off with honey, right? Which itself is, honey is almost like the lifeblood of an ecosystem, right? Because it comes from all the plants that are around it. That's what the bees do. They go around and they pollinate the plants, and they get them, you know, they get everything, and they come back to the hive, and that's how the honey is made. So the honey is a direct reflection of what's happening in the ecosystem. Right, so you're starting with that, and you're using that honey as the sugar for your fermentation. You know, because when we humans, when we make alcohol, there has to be some kind of a sugar. So for me, it's honey. You know, if you're making wine, the sugar comes from grapes. If you're making beer, the sugar comes from, you know, malted barley or some other grain that you extract the sugars out of. So anytime you have alcohol, it started off as sugar on some level.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's, and this is kind of, you know, this is not how to market mead, okay? But if you think about what, or alcohol in general, but if you think about what it is during the fermentation process, you have yeast, right? And it literally eats the sugar that's in the liquid, and what comes out the other end is alcohol. So alcohol is yeast poop, okay? So you can tell I'm not a marketing guy, right? But that's a pretty, you know, accurate description of what's happening. So with honey, you know, you have something that already is, to me, it's one of the most profound foods that we have on the planet available to us. You know, there's this whole sort of movement that's almost like this mysticism around beekeeping and things like that. There's this book out there called, I believe it's called The Sacred Way of the Bee or something like that. I don't think I have that title quite right. But, you know, if you talk to a beekeeper, they'll be the first ones to tell you that, you know, if you're pissed off or agitated or upset or something like that, don't go near the hive because you're going to get stung, right?
Wow.
The bees pick up on that energy. So, you know, if you are going to deal with bees, you know, you have to watch your energy, you know, and,
yeah,
you know, so there's this whole energy system really with honey and bees that is really attractive to me, you know, cause that's totally in tune with, you know, my, you know, sort of my worldview about why we're here as humans on this planet, you know, and we exist as part of our environment and our ecosystem and our habitat. And, you know, we have to interact with it well. You know, so
yeah,
when you start with something as sort of high level, I'll use that term, high level as honey, and then you transform it into something else, you know, that's sort of where the inspiration for that phrase, meat is the highest expression, alchemical expression of an ecosystem, came from.
Huh.
That's so cool. I love that thing.
This did not ever this never occurred to me ever. I just figured honey, mead, yeah, okay. And never, see, I always learn something from our guest.
Yeah.
And I have to agree, yeah, because completely right. Bees are, no bees, no food. I mean, no bees, no anything.
No bees, no life.
Let's
be clear. If the bees are gone, we're in trouble. Let's be clear, you know. And, there's a lot of theories now about what's going on, but it's pretty clear that, you know, the way that we're growing food now in our culture and in the planet is not coincident with a healthy bee population. You know, the pesticides and the GMO foods and all that kind of stuff, you know, we're in trouble if we don't make some changes. And that's clear pretty much everywhere you look. And if you look at bee populations, that's one place to see that what we're doing is not going to be sustainable.
Exactly. We're trying to manufacture everything.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's annoying. I'm sorry, I interrupted this.
No, you're fine. So, in essence, like, you can tell probably before a lot of people even notice that there's an issue ecologically, because being a mead maker, you deal with the product so much that you know instantly if you're going to have a good year or a bad year. You know, for, well, everything, but especially making mead. How far into, like, how old is the honey that you use on any given batch? Is it always, like, from a freshly gathered batch, or is there some in reserve, or how does that work? Like, where do you keep the honey dependent upon what's going to be available?
Right. Well, again, I'm not doing anything like on a commercial scale or anything like that. I'm a home brewer. So, you know, generally when I buy honey, I generally get it in 5-gallon buckets. You know, that's a common way to get it. You get a good price break there generally. You know, and generally I pay, you know, anywhere from $150 to $250 for a 5-gallon bucket of mead. For a 5-gallon bucket of honey.
And then that'll
transform into, let me just do a little bit of math, out of that gallon or 5 gallons of honey, generally I can get probably about 20 gallons of mead, somewhere in there. Yeah, so it lasts for a while. I mean, you know, I generally do at least a batch of mead per month and sometimes more. I think last year I did about 15 batches. And I do small batches. I do 3 gallons. I tend to like to do more batches that are smaller rather than fewer batches that are larger. A lot of people will do like 5 or 6 gallons at a time. They'll have bigger carboys to ferment in. If carboy is just a big glass container, like a big 5 gallon bottle or a 3 gallon bottle, they'll let you put a carboy on the top. And, three gallons works for me. I generally like that size. It allows me to make a lot of different batches, which is a cool thing because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I like to incorporate a lot of ingredients out of my ecosystem. You know, I'm definitely, you know, in terms of diet and health and things like that, that's sort of where I'm at, just personally. You know, I'm definitely a locavore. I like to eat local food. You know, most of my calories come from local food. You know, wild harvested or foraged, if I can do it, that's the best. That's my ideal. You know, I like for everything to come out of something that I've foraged. And that's true, like, for, let me think here. Here's an example, right? I made a batch of mead a while ago called Tree Quinox Mead. I called it that because I made it on the spring equinox. I think this is 2 years ago. So, you know, I'm playing with the word equinox. And then the tree is because all the ingredients came from trees except for the honey itself. Instead of using water, I used maple sap that I harvested. It was actually given to me by a friend of mine who harvested it from, you know, his local ecosystem out of the maple trees. So just plain maple sap before it gets boiled down into maple syrup. So I used that instead of water. And then I took the maple sap and I made an herbal tea out of it. And the herbs that I used were basically spruce boughs from a spruce tree on my property. I live up here in Maine in the woods. And so I got some spruce boughs, and I made a tea out of it, like an herbal tea. And that's what you know, Native Americans and the pioneers used to do for vitamin C. Because oranges don't grow very well in Maine, right?
It's that cold weather and shit.
Right,
definitely.
Exactly. So if you're going to get vitamin C, you know, that's what they used to do. And in fact, a good spruce tea has a lot more vitamin C than oranges do, and it's right here in the ecosystem. So I made this mead, and I started with the tea that tasted like Christmas almost or Yule. You know, it has this very evergreen flavor to it and the smell to it. And then you take that tea, you cool it down. You mix it with the honey, you add the yeast, and then you put it in the carboy and just let it ferment. And it takes, you know, for a batch of mead, in the summertime when it's warm, it might take 3 weeks. In the wintertime when it's cooler, it goes slower. Sometimes they go for 3 to 4 months even. Fermentation's done, and at that point you've got mead. I'm oversimplifying it a little bit, but, you know, that's the basic process.
Wow.
I have a question because I don't know if I still have it or not because I kind of gave up the ghost of trying to go in and do it and get everything together. But I was going to make a batch of mead probably like last year or the year before.
Okay.
And call it All Hallows Mead.
Yep.
But I was thinking of making that with orange, clove, and pumpkin.
Can you make
it with pumpkin?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, how would that work? Would you have to use the rinds or?
Right.
You know, what part of the fruit do you use? The whole thing or?
Yeah, I actually have a story about that. Okay. The guy that taught me how to make mead, and I've been doing mead for several years now, but the guy that taught me how to make mead has been doing it for about 25 years or so. And he came over one night, and we actually I used to do a podcast with my family about sort of our food journey and being locavores. We talked about mead some, but it wasn't about mead, but it was just this other podcast we did. Anyway, so he comes over with this bottle of mead, and he tells me, okay, I brought something special tonight that we're going to try on the air, and it's a bottle of 17-year-old mead. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, and mead's just like wine or any other type of alcohol that's where the alcohol percentage is high enough that it's preserved. You know, I mean, something lower, like beer, you want to drink it while it's fresh because it'll spoil. But if it's got high alcohol, you know, I mean, everybody knows the saying, wine gets better with age, and the same is true of mead. So it was the smoothest mead I've ever had by far, and it was a pumpkin mead that he made. And I'm not a huge fan of pumpkin personally, but that mead was extraordinary, mostly because it was really smooth and it had aged really well. And the cool thing about it is when he made this batch of mead 17 years ago, he literally it was at Samhain time, so he had a jack-o'-lantern that he had, and when he made his jack-o'-lanterns, he took aside one of the pumpkins, and he opened it up and cleaned it out, and he actually made the mead and let it ferment inside the pumpkin.
Oh, that's genius.
Right, right. And he kept it in there as long as he could until eventually, you know, the outer part of the pumpkin starts to deteriorate a little bit, and he had to siphon it out and go into, a jug or whatever. But it was pretty cool. So, to me, stories like that just go to show you that, I mean, humans have been making mead literally for thousands of years, really tens of thousands of years. I mean, mead has existed as far back in history as we can see. You know, mead is part of the human experience. I mean, it's just hardwired at this point because we've been doing it for so long. You know, so we had mead before we ever had a word for sanitation, before we ever had a word for, carboy or fermentation or anything like that. It's very easy to do. And, you don't need to be intimidated by the process. You know, if humans were doing it 10,000 years ago, you can do it in your kitchen, I promise. It's really not that hard,
I've got another question, because what I did now, I don't have a whole lot of extra money to go around, so I tried to do it on the cheap. You know, and I've got most of the stuff to do it, but I went to a water bottle company.
Okay.
And I called ahead. It was, local around here. But I found one. And, they still had the caps on them, which had the little hole, which could have fit the tube in and everything. You know,
right.
It's like, just perfect. And they're free. But you have to tell them, that you're going to use it for pennies. You can't tell them that you're going to put other liquid in there. But, they're the thick, heavy plastic water bottles. Are those okay to use?
Yeah, I personally prefer to use glass, just because I don't trust the plastic necessarily. I should preface that I'm pretty hardcore about this kind of stuff, And we should talk about the water that I use in a second, because that's a cool story too. But since this is a sort of a pagan show, I think people appreciate it. But with plastics, especially if the plastics are exposed to sunlight, there are these things called BPAs that are in the plastic that can leach into the liquid.
Yeah.
And I'm not, so I'm a little wary of that. So for reasons like that, I use glass. But then again, there's plenty of people making mead with plastic jugs, So the answer is yes, you can. Is it optimal? Probably not, but it'll work.
Wow.
Okay. I know sometimes, the carboys, especially with the shipping, if you get them shipped to you,
right.
If you're lucky enough to have, a brewing store close by you, I would look that up first. Because those things can get kind of expensive, even off of Amazon. They're like, $22 a pop, $30 a pop, sometimes 50.
that's true. Ouch. I mean, generally to get started, you probably need maybe $75 to $100 worth of equipment, and that's if you buy a brand-new carboy. You'll need a cap for it. You'll need an airlock. You'll need probably a siphoning tube. You probably want a funnel of some sort, and you want to have a stock pot big enough to hold the, all the ingredients that you're mixing together for each batch. So, then there's other things that you don't have to have but are helpful, like a hydrometer. That's a tool that you can use to measure how much sugar is in the water, and that's how you can sort of figure out the alcohol percentage of your mead. I talk about that in my ebook a little bit and on the website. It's not necessary, and when I first started, I didn't bother with it. I just sort of I would just wing it and just pour honey in until it felt right. If you want to get a little more precise about it, then it's definitely a good thing. And I can't imagine doing mead without a hydrometer now, but, I've been doing it for a long time, and I'm not intimidated by it anymore. It doesn't seem scary to me to use more equipment. you know, but it's not necessary. But, you know, so figure about $100 outlay to get yourself set up with some equipment. And then each batch, depending on what you put in it, you know, a gallon of honey is probably going to be $50, somewhere in there. And then, you know, that's going to give you maybe 10 to 15 bottles of mead, somewhere in there. So if you break it down, you know, $5 to $7 a bottle, that's pretty cheap. And somebody in the chat.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Right, exactly. You know, somebody in the chat room just said, find a local brewing store, no shipping and good conversation, and I absolutely agree with that. You know, there's homebrew shops all over the place. There is a lot of people making alcohol. You know, especially beer, but mead is almost seeing a renaissance right now, in a sense, in that it reminds me a lot of what happened with beer like 20 years ago, like, you know, when all these little craft brews and the microbrew started happening a lot.
Yeah,
and, you know, every town.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Every town would have, you know, brew pubs popping up on every corner, you know, that
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think you're starting to see that some with mead. There's meaderies popping up all over the place. And, you know, most towns have a meadery nearby. You know, I'm sure there's one near you in North Carolina. You know, up here in Maine, there's 3 or 4. So if we've got 3 or 4, then, you know, I know other places that are more populated have them too.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Now, with the yeast.
Yes.
Can you just buy, like, if somebody's just giving this a shot.
Right.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Right.
Before we go into the water story, because I haven't forgotten about that.
Okay.
What kind of yeast should you use? Can you use, like, regular bread yeast? Can you get it out of the grocery store? Do you have to get a special kind?
Yeah,
you know,
great question.
If you go to a brew store, they're going to point you in the right direction. But for somebody
right.
who doesn't have all this stuff available.
Right. Yeah, you can absolutely use bread yeast. I've never done it personally, but, you know, yeast is yeast. I mean, the same stuff that makes bread will also make alcohol. You know, in fact, you don't even need to buy yeast necessarily. There are techniques you can use, and this is what our ancestors did, because we didn't even know that yeast existed until maybe 150 years ago, until we got microscopes. We had no idea what yeast was. It didn't even register. We just thought it was sort of, you know, this magical process that if you, you know, make sugar water in the right way, then someday you'll have alcohol. It just sort of happened. And, you know, it wasn't until, you know, we got microscopes and, oh, what are all these little things swimming around in my water? You know, oh, that's yeast. Okay. There are techniques that, you know, wild yeast that's in the air, just airborne yeast that's in, you're breathing it right now. Everybody has yeast. You know, there's yeast all over the place. You can
is
harness
that.
Is that
why my ass is spreading?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. For real.
I think that comment's going to get a rise out of people for sure.
Thank you.
All right. I'll be here all week. Right? But,
all right.
Oh, 1 point for James. That was good.
There you go.
That took me a second to get that.
Yeah. There's different kinds of yeast and there's different strains that have been cultured over the years, and they have slightly different characteristics, different flavors. They'll tolerate alcohol in slightly different ways. In other words, like if you use something like a champagne yeast, right, that is more tolerant of higher alcohol levels than other types of yeast. So if you want to make a really strong yeast, like up about say 17, 18, 19% alcohol, you would use something like a champagne yeast, you know, things like that.
I'm writing that down.
There you go. the yeast I like to use, my favorite yeast for making mead is made by Red Star. It's a yeast company, and it's a strain called Montrachet, Red Star Montrachet. That's what I like to use. I pay I don't know, it's like 30 cents for a packet of yeast at the brew shop. It's really inexpensive, and it's readily available. And, you know, that's just what I like. In fact, I haven't even really experimented much with yeast. I pretty much use that for most, if not all, of the batches that I've made, and I have no complaints with it. The different yeasts will have different characteristics and different flavor profiles, different fermentation times, different alcohol tolerance and things like that. And, you know, alcohol tolerance is something we should talk about really quick, too, because it's kind of an interesting story. So we talked earlier about how alcohol is yeast poop, right? So if you think about a batch of mead that's fermenting, and you think about what's happening, right? You have all the yeasts in there that are eating up the sugar, excreting the alcohol, and gradually creating an environment where there's less and less sugar and more alcohol, right? That's what fermentation is. That's what happens. But eventually, that alcohol percentage is going to get high enough that the yeast can't survive anymore, and the yeast die off because there's too much alcohol.
Oh.
Which is a very interesting metaphor. Can you think of another organism that gradually pollutes its environment to the point where it can't survive anymore?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a cool little metaphor. But for a long time, for thousands of years, that was the strongest alcohol we could get. It's generally anywhere from 15% to 20% alcohol, or in other words, 30% to 40% proof. You know, you hear, what proof it is. And it wasn't until the Arab alchemists around the 12th century discovered distillation, and then that hit Europe around the 16th century. We started getting much stronger alcohol, and things like whiskey and vodka and, you know, all the other distilled beverages, hit the common people. And that's, funnily enough, that's also when things like alcoholism started really becoming a factor in our culture. It was, I don't want to say it was unheard of before then, but it certainly wasn't the problem that it is now.
Wow.
Huh.
Okay, I want to hear about the water. Can we get to the water part now?
The water, okay, yeah. Okay, so earlier we were talking about how few ingredients there are in mead. So you want to use the best quality water that you can. I generally would not be caught dead personally. And again, I'm hardcore about this stuff, okay? But I would not ever use urban tap water, or as I call it, urban tap liquid to make mead with. Mostly because a lot of that stuff is, there's chlorine in there, there's fluoride in there, all that stuff's going to kill your yeast anyway. So, in some areas where those percentages are high enough, you probably can't use that anyway, just because it won't work.
Huh.
You know, there's too much chlorine.
Right.
So what kind of water do we drink? You know, what's healthiest for us? And, you know, there's a lot of talk out there about different water. You know, one thing about water is when you drink water, within about 20 minutes or so, the water that you drink, that's your blood. It goes right to your bloodstream, you know. So the blood that's flowing through your body is a direct reflection of the water that you're drinking. So, you know, as somebody who, you know, it's important to me on a lot of levels, spiritual and otherwise, to live in as close harmony with the earth as I can. So the journey that I have there is about probably like 4 years ago or so, I started drinking spring water. And I don't mean spring water that I buy in a plastic jug in the store. I mean a spring that I drive to with my glass containers and harvest the water out of the spring in the glass containers and bring it back to my house 20 gallons at a time every couple of weeks or so. So to me, that's like going to church, right? I mean, that's like, you know, that's me drinking water that the earth is offering up when it's ready to give it, not when we drill into her to extract it. You know what I mean? And it just feels better to me. So that's what I drink, and that's certainly what I make all of my mead out of. I mean, unless I'm using something special like maple sap. But if I'm just using water, it always comes from the spring near my house. And, you know, for those of you interested in that, there's a pretty cool website called findaspring.com. It's basically it's a Google Maps kind of situation where, you know, you can pull up your address and start looking for springs that are near you. There are people that have them marked and, you know, things like that. So that's a good resource, you know. And you can ask around if, you know, if you're in a rural area, you know, and you talk to, like, you know, any sort of elders in your area or in your community, they might know where a spring is nearby. And I generally recommend checking it out. Now, the spring I go to up here in Maine, it's on a mountaintop in Maine. It's beautiful. And the water that comes out of it is probably the cleanest substance I will ever come into contact with on this planet. When you're analyzing water, one of the things that you do is you figure out how much stuff is dissolved in the water, right? Because that's what water does. They call it the universal solvent, and just about everything will dissolve in water. I mean, not everything, but almost everything will dissolve in water. So if you're going to measure, you know, how much stuff is in there, they measure that in parts per million, right? How many parts per million of stuff is dissolved in the water? And most tap water, like urban tap water, is going to be somewhere between 1 and 300 parts per million, something like that. If it's as high as like 400 parts per million, then you have to call it mineral water and, you know, things like that. Cool. So that will tell you how much stuff is in there. And the water that I get from the spring is 10 parts per million. It's just super clear, super clean. It tastes delicious. It's amazingly hydrated. It just feels so good in my body energetically. So, you know, that's my water spiel. I'm really hardcore about that. And, you know, I love to use really good water. You know, whenever I travel, that's the thing I miss the most is having really good water to drink like that.
Yeah. That's awesome. See, yeah, I wish we had one closer to me. I have a stream in my backyard, but it's got a very large snapping turtle, and it's not the cleanest water.
You have to be careful with streams. The thing about a spring, the thing that makes a spring unique, is that the water comes from, you know, deep in the aquifers of the earth, you know, deep in the bowels of the earth, where it's literally encased in stone, these huge aquifers. And, you know, springs are really magical places because, you know, and, you know, there's a whole sort of mysticism thing around water because, you know, even scientists, it's like there's some really puzzling things about water. You know, like most things, when you freeze them, they shrink. And as they heat up, they expand, and eventually they become a gas. But what happens when you freeze water? Like if you put water in the freezer, what happens? It gets bigger. It's the opposite, you know, and it's that's the only substance that scientists know of that does that. It's really kind of strange, and that has to do with you know, how springs work. Because if water didn't have that property, the springs wouldn't come up. Because the springs are on the tops of the mountains, and the aquifers are deep in the earth. You know, so you have to be careful with streams because, you know, and a lot of people go, wow, that water comes out of the earth. How do you know it's clean? How do you know it's safe? You know, one way to test it is with a TDS meter, but that's not going to tell you if there's, like, bacteria or anything in the water. But bacteria is only going to get in the water generally when it's close to the surface for a while. And the way you tell that is temperature, right? The water that comes out of the spring I go to is cold. It's you know, down around 40 degrees or so, which in the summertime is amazing. Sticking your head under the tap of the spring, you know, you have 40-degree water, you know, you know, going on your head on a 90-degree day, it's fabulous. So the colder the water is, that tells you it's coming from, you know, coming directly up from the aquifers, and it's not been airborne. So I definitely would not take water out of a stream without purifying it first. And, you know, you can boil it, or if you want to purify it, let it boil for a while to kill any nasties that are in there, and then filter it. That you could do. You know, but, you know, again, I'm not sure, you know, what the quality would be there. You know, if you don't have a spring near you, then, you know, just get the best spring water you can at your health food store or something like that. And there's other strategies. Yeah. There's what do they call it, like reverse osmosis filtering, other filtering strategies you can use. But, you know, I always encourage everyone to use the best possible water that they can, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We make the same recommendation whenever possible.
Right,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this way, somebody said, you never know what's been upstream.
Yeah, exactly.
Drinking deer pee.
Yeah,
that's so gross. I just grossed myself out.
Our fans are crazy. What can I say? We have some crazy listeners out there. What can I tell you?
So, now, you don't sell it right now. We've had this thing where, you know, some of our guests, they come on, and then all of a sudden, bam, they get, like, you know, offers to start selling other places. So,
right.
You know, it may happen. But,
well, here's the thing with mead. Unfortunately, alcohol is a very highly regulated substance in our culture, right? You can't just sell alcohol. You need liquor licenses, and, you know, there's a whole lot of legal issues that you have to overcome in order to sell alcohol, including mead. And, you know, as it is now, selling homebrew is not legal. Okay, you can make homebrew. There might be a few states that still are sort of behind the times a little bit, but as far as I know, in almost all the states, if not all of them, you can make your own alcohol. selling it, on the other hand, is a different story. And besides that, you know, this is something, you know, we can talk about, and that's sort of the difference between commercial mead and homebrew mead. I love the fact that there's so many commercial meaderies popping up. I think that's amazing. It's fabulous, you know, because mead's an amazing drink, right? But if you think about practices and what is scalable, I mean, I make small batches. I do 3-gallon batches with my spring water and all that. If I went to go commercial and I'm making, you know, 500-gallon batches, 1,000-gallon batches, you know, I'm not going to go in my car and collect spring water for 1,000 gallons of mead, right? It's just not practical, you know. So, right. And then furthermore, you know, one of the things I do with my meads, and, you know, if you go to bardicbrews.net and look at my recipes, you'll see I'm really, really into herbalism, and I totally incorporate a lot of herbalism into my meads as well. And that gets trickier on a larger scale as well. So there's things that you can do on a homebrew scale, I think, that don't scale up very well to commercial production. It just doesn't work very well. It's not practical. Out of all the meads that I've had, let's say the top 10 meads that I've had, probably 9 of them were homebrewed, if not all 10. I think there's stuff that you can do in small batches that just don't scale up. So that's a benefit, I think, of homebrewing mead, and that's why the site that I have, I encourage everybody to make their own mead, or at least, you know, get into a community that has people that make mead, and that's the mead that, you know, to me, that's the pinnacle. If you can do that, that's the best quality. Now, that said, I don't mean that as a slam to commercial mead, because commercial mead's great. If you're going to get a commercial mead, chances are the public the market for that mead would want something that's consistent, right? So if you get a blueberry mead from the meadery down the road, you pretty much know what it's going to taste like because you've had it before. So, you know, whereas with homebrewing, every batch is different, you know what I mean? And that doesn't necessarily scale up. So the thing that I love and respect about commercial meads is the good ones anyway have got it dialed in. You know, it's consistent. They're very, very precise about it, very almost scientific about it. You know, they're measuring the pH. They're measuring the alcohol percentage. They're, you know, timing everything very, very precisely. And they get very good quality that way. And then they can distribute it well, and they've got all the paperwork done, all the legal hurdles have been overcome, and they can legally sell it. The more mead there is, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, there's definitely space for commercial mead, you know. I mean, I make my own, and I know a lot of people here, a lot of friends of mine make it as well. So most of what I drink is homebrew, but every once in a while, you know, I'll get a chance if I'm out for dinner or something like that and the place has mead on the menu, and that's happening more and more, I'm happy to say, then I'll get a glass of, you know, commercial mead with my dinner, and that's fabulous.
Tell me about quality as far as flavor and stuff when you drink something that somebody else is making commercially as opposed to what you're making as a home brewer. I'm sure you're seeing a huge difference in flavor and content. And, I mean, is it just better to really make your own and maybe only have a commercial mead once in a while?
Well, you know, I mean, it depends on what's available to you. I mean, you know, if you get into it, you know, I mean, to me, I was making beer for a while. I was sort of a beer brewer. And then my friend, you know, that I talked about earlier with the pumpkin, he taught me how to make mead, and I made my first batch of mead, and that was it. I literally haven't made beer since. I totally fell in love with mead, and that's what I'm into now. It requires some work and some attention. I mean, it's not like, you know, you're not slaving away for hours and hours and hours on each batch or anything like that, but, you know, you have to keep up with it. So if you're willing to put that time in, then you're going to have some great homebrew, and it's awesome, you know, for bringing the gatherings, and, you know, it's awesome at Yule time for gifts, and, it's good to have around, I think. And, you know, to me, it's another way, I'm going to use a big loaded word here, but it's another way to embrace the sacred, right? Because to me, when I make it from scratch using ingredients from my ecosystem, that alcohol becomes sacred, which is something that's desperately needed in our culture, given how we treat, you know, alcohol. You know, most people think of alcohol in our culture. You know, they're thinking of, you know, frat boys puking in the bushes, or, you know, a homeless guy with a, you know, a wino with a plastic or with a paper bag, you know, passed out in the alleyway, or date rape, or whatever. There's all these negative kind of, or 50-year-old grumpy guys with beer bellies, or, you know, whatever. And, so I think our as a culture, I think our relationship with alcohol is a little unbalanced. And, I'm not a counselor. I'm not a substance abuse counselor or anything like that. But it would be very interesting to me to try and experiment with alcoholics, right, and teach them how to make their own alcohol and say, okay, you're not allowed to drink commercial alcohol anymore because it's too readily available. It's there. It's just something you buy and you chug it, and it's gone, and that's it. That's not a good relationship with it. It would be interesting to me to see what happens to alcoholics if you have them make their own alcohol and, you know, treat it with a sacred intent and realize that, okay, I'm going to make something that is the highest alchemical expression of my ecosystem. That changes the relationship there. So, you know, whatever. I mean, again, I I'm not a counselor or a substance abuse person or anything like that, but that would be interesting to me to see, you know,
I wonder if we can get, you know, like petition the government to give him funding for research. That would be awesome. Because I would love to find that out. For the simple fact that, you know, in my family, you know, alcoholism runs, you know, through the veins. So it's like, you know, I enjoy my drinks and, you know, I can walk away from it. And it's like, you got to wonder, too. You know, what kind of additives are in the alcohol?
Absolutely.
You know,
let's talk about one of those additives. Let's talk about hops.
Okay.
Hops is one of the common ingredients in beer, right? And that's what gives beer its bitterness, generally. You know, there's an interesting story about hops, and I think pagans will be very interested in this, actually. Up until the 15th century, or the 16th century, like 1517 or somewhere in there, I forget what it was, there were these things all over Europe called groot guilds. The word I'm using there is groot. It's like the word fruit, but with a G instead of an F. And groot guilds were basically the herbalists of the community. They were the herbal supply shops, okay, back then. And, you would go there, and if you wanted to make a certain brew, that's where you would get your herbs. You would go, okay, you know, whatever, that, you know, it's winter's coming and I've got a runny nose. So they go, okay, well, here's the herbs that you need, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, and they would take that and they would make alcohol, and they would, you would almost go to the healer or even to the pub, really. I mean, not like pubs like we have now, but, you know, the sort of the community center, and you would go and you would get an ale for what was ailing you, right? And alcohol was seen as part of the healing process. Okay, so in 1517 in Germany, they passed a law called the Purity Act, okay? And they always name them things like the Purity Act or the Patriot Act or whatever, so you could never possibly have an issue with it because it's the Purity Act. What, are you against purity? You know, so the Purity Act said, okay, legally speaking, beer, and they didn't know about yeast at the time, so you got to remember that, beer is water and barley and hops. And if it's not water and barley and hops, it's not beer, legally speaking. And if it's not beer, we can confiscate it, right? And so basically they said that all beer has to be made with hops is what they said in this law. And virtually overnight, the groot guilds that were around before them were wiped out. We lost a sort of an essential part of how we dealt with healthcare. You know, and keep in mind at the time, this is the 1500s where, you know, things like capitalism is starting, the scientific revolution is starting, the Enlightenment is starting. So it's this time of transformation. And also the witch hunts were starting. You know, so all the village healers were being burned at the stake. And their craft, the supply shops, were made illegal. And, you know, so it's this transformative time in our culture. And, you know, so alcohol, and also at the same time, that's when distilled high alcohol beverages started to show up a little bit, within a few hundred years of this time anyway. You know, so our relationship with alcohol changed quite a bit. It went from something that is part of our health, part of our healing, and mm-hmm. became, you know, something where, let's get shit-faced this weekend, rah, you know. There was a shift there. So, you know, when I first got into mead, before I got into mead, when I was doing beer, I wanted to sort of experiment with that. And, you know, and it's interesting that they mandated that it had to be hops that were in the beer, okay? And the reason for that is hops is like any other herb. It's a plant. It's an herb, right? And the reason we use that herb in our beer is, number one, it's a preservative, which is good. That's one of its good properties. And another good property is the bitterness. It does add a nice flavor. I mean, it's kind of an intense flavor on its own, but when it's done well in a beer, it adds a nice layer to it flavor-wise. But hops are also a sedative. It puts people to sleep. Hops reduce the sex drive in people.
Oh.
No hops for you.
Right. So, there's actually language around that time period, around this Purity Act, where it will make the commoners easier to control, you know, things
mm-hmm.
like that. You know, so there's all this, you know, all this stuff happening around it. So when I was doing beer at this time, when I sort of learned about all this stuff, I was like, well, screw that. I don't want to use hops anymore now that I know what it does. Hops is really estrogenic, too. That's another one of its properties.
I don't know that either. Wow.
Yeah, so, if you think about somebody who drinks too much beer, you know, a guy that drinks too much beer, what happens to him? He gets the beer belly, he gets the man boobs, he gets this, this goddess-shaped figure, you know, because you're getting all these calories from beer, and then the hops tend to tell the body what to do with those calories, right? And it's all the estrogen takes effect. So I wanted to – that's how I sort of got involved with herbalism. It's like, okay, wait a minute. Let's go back to before this change in our culture. And I remember the very first non-hops beer that I made, I used different herbs. I used St. John's wort because instead of putting people to sleep, I wanted to lift them up and make them happy. And what else? I used a few other things. I basically, instead of putting people to sleep, I wanted to make a beer that would raise their spirits and, give them energy. And, you know,
that's
and I,
awesome.
So, yeah, right. So there's all kinds of stuff that you can do. I'm not a huge fan of hops for that reason. You know, I mean, every once in a while I still get a beer when I'm out and things like that. And I'm not saying I don't ever drink hops, but, I don't generally, you know, I haven't brewed with it very much since I found out about it. So, and instead I incorporate other herbs, you know, things like that, you know, and that's definitely really easy to do when you're making your own mead because, you know, instead of starting with water, make an herbal tea and brew with that, you know.
Yeah.
And then also after the first stage of fermentation is done, when you're making mead, you'll have your carboy with the mead inside, right? The bubbling in the airlock has stopped and the fermentation's over. And then eventually a lot of the solids that are there will settle to the bottom. So you have a layer of sediment on the bottom of the thing, and then you have the increasingly clear mead on top. Then generally I'll siphon it out into jugs so it can keep clearing. And then sometimes once it's in the jugs, at that point you've got 15% alcohol or so, so you can add another layer of herbal flavor or an herbal profile by tincturing. You can put herbs in while it's clearing. And and the herbs will tincture into the alcohol. You know, so you can add ingredients at various stages of the mead. You know, a lot of times I'll do something like I'll just toss a vanilla bean in if I want to give it a vanilla flavor. Or, you know, whatever. There's a million things you can do. And I talk about that in my ebook about how you can add, you know, different ingredients at different stages of the brew. There's this whole spectrum of herbs that we can work with. And, herbalism is something I've really learned a lot about over the past few years, and I love it. It's an essential part of my healthcare strategy now, for sure. And
that
extends into my mead making as well.
That's awesome. Now, what was your favorite? I know this is going to be probably hard. What was your favorite batch ever?
Oh boy, my favorite batch ever. I got to think about this for a minute. One of them is a wild black cherry mead that I made. It was like the first year I was making mead, and unfortunately I don't have any of them anymore. I've drank it all. But it was at the time I was when I first started making mead. I really like sweet meads, you know, where there's honey left after it's done fermenting.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I wanted, and it was a really, really, really sweet, almost like a dessert mead. It was wicked sweet, and as we say in New England, wicked sweet. you know, so and it used wild black cherries that a friend of mine had growing in his yard. So we harvested some of the black cherries in season. And the color on that was just fantastic. It looked like a really deep red color. Oh, it was fabulous. That was a good one. Let's see. What else? This past year, I made a blueberry mullein mead with it was actually a double blueberry mullein because I used twice as many berries as I normally use.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another one that just had a really deep berry flavor. That was a really good one. What else? It didn't necessarily taste the best, but one of my favorite batches was I made a batch called Coca-Cola mead.
Really?
I really did. And, you know, and I was reading about Coca-Cola, and I read how original Coke was made with cola nuts from Africa and coca leaves from South America, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I actually found a place that sells coca leaves from South America. And, you know, if you don't know, coca leaves is where the cocaine comes from. You can pull cocaine out of the coca leaves. But, you know, like anything else, when we humans sort of concentrate things and extract things, that's where we get into trouble, you know, whether it's cane sugar or alcohol or coca or opium, and we get heroin, or, you know, when we make things really strong, that tends to be trouble for us. But if you look at the indigenous population in South America, they'll chew on coca leaves, and they've been doing that for thousands of years. And it's like that's how they start their day, you know. And they use it the same way we use caffeine, you know. And when it's taken in its natural form, you know, it doesn't cause nearly the problems that, you know, snorting coke is going to cause, you know.
Well,
so,
that's because it's out with so many different chemicals. And
right, exactly, you know. So So apparently if you've got coca leaves, you can sort of decocainize those coca leaves in the same way that you can decaffeinate coffee, right? So there's a place online that sells these decocainized coca leaves. So I got some coca leaves from there. I got some cola nuts from an herbal supply shop, and I made a Coca-Cola mead out of that, and that was fun. The flavor on that
was
kind of, the flavor on it was kind of interesting. It was I have a few bottles of it left, and I decided I want to let those age for a few years before I drink them again, because it was pretty intense. But you know, but yeah, that was a fun one. It wasn't necessarily the best flavor of the meads that I've made, but it was certainly one of the most interesting ones. Yeah, boy, it's hard to tell. I mean, I've made, you know, dozens and dozens of different batches at this point, and it's hard to pick a favorite.
Yeah,
wow.
It's kind of like, you know, well. Trying to pick your favorite band, or
right,
you know,
yeah. Which of your kids is your favorite?
yeah.
Which of your children do you love the most?
Right, exactly.
Oh God, that's too funny. She's
laughing because I've actually asked that question before. Which of your children is your favorite?
Right.
Nobody ever answers me. It's just one of those devil's advocate things I'm known for.
Yeah, it's like, I can't say that. No, I'm just kidding.
You're so funny. Because on different days, it's a different child. I went through having two sons as well. It's different on different days.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. The same is true with mead. I mean, different days, I prefer different ones. I mean, because with mead, there's such a wide variety of flavors. I mean, even before you start adding stuff to it, like berries and fruits and herbs and all the other stuff, even just with a plain traditional mead, it can be sweet, it can be dry, it can use this kind of honey or that kind of honey or different yeasts and all that kind of stuff. So there's this huge, huge wide spectrum of flavor profiles that you can get with mead. I think more so really than other forms of alcohol. I mean, because, you know, if you look at beer, I mean, you know, if you compare something like Bud Light to something like Guinness, right, there's obviously a difference there. You know, but in both cases, it's still beer to a degree, and there's a lot of similarities between them. But with mead, I think there's a wider possibility, just for the reasons we talked about earlier. You can get a really dry mead at a maybe a low alcohol content. That'll be like kind of a refreshing sort of summer drink. Or you can get a really strong mead with that's really sweet, you know, and that's like a dessert thing that you would, like a liqueur almost, that you would sip.
Yeah, like a port.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And that's before you even start adding things to it, like blueberries or apples or whatever, you know. I mean, you can add anything you want in with mead, and I've done a lot of them for sure.
That's awesome. You know, I'm not necessarily a fan of beer per se.
Right.
I like a good Hefeweizen.
Right.
I will drink that.
That's
a wheat beer,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I like the wheat. I am not a fan of the hops.
Right. Yeah.
Now,
and
I'm sure I could drink it in like a tea or something.
Right.
You know, for benefits. You know, especially since I'm edging closer and closer to that time of a woman's life.
Right.
But
what are you trying to say?
If it has estrogen, you know, I got to look into that, because I bet that combined with Damiana would be a really good menopause tea.
It might be. The thing about I should clarify that. What's the term for it? Xenoestrogens. That's what hops has. They're xenoestrogens. It's basically a chemical that's close to estrogen, but not exactly the same. But it fools our body into thinking that it's estrogen, if that makes sense. It passes. Like if you don't need estrogen, it passes as estrogen. But if you do need estrogen, then it's not going to fulfill that need. And again, I'm not a chemist, so I don't really understand it fully. But I would definitely encourage you to check it out. I mean, Google it. You know, herbalism hops and see what pops up. You never know. You know.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Right.
Yeah, especially since her older sister here is at that time of life. Hello. Just saying. I'll take all the help I can get.
There you go.
I will mix some tea up for you. I'm like the alchemist of the family. So
nice.
Yes, she is.
Nice.
Yeah, and actually now I've got a good word, a Buddhist. Did you say?
A what?
A Buddhist.
Groot. Groot, is that what you're talking about? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I lost the word.
There you go.
Oh, my God. Well, this has been so much fun.
And informative, I have to say. I've learned some stuff that I did not know. I really have a greater appreciation. Well, I can't say that every mead maker is the same, just as every mead isn't the same. But
right.
I have to say, James, I'm really impressed, and I learned something. I mean, I love it when I learn something, because I don't know shit about shit. And the way you describe – well, seriously, though, the way you describe, you know, the spiritual connection – in what you do, it would never have occurred to me that someone would feel that way about making, you know, an alcoholic drink. And it just makes sense, and I love that about you.
Excellent.
You've gotten a fan. I'm a fan, and I like mead, so you've got me as a double fan double times over, because I'm just like so impressed, and I love it when I learn something like that. It just makes me feel like, yeah, you know what, there are people that actually think about what the hell they're doing and why they do it, and that's really important to me. So thank you for doing that.
Excellent. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Couple quick things, if I have a minute, is that okay?
Please. Oh, yes,
go
ahead.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. One thing is, I just want to reiterate that I really encourage people to make their own mead, you know, and I know I've said that already, but that's really important to me. And one of the reasons that I say it, especially if you buy my ebook to learn how, then I expect one day we'll meet in person and you'll share your mead with me, That's an ulterior motive that I have, is everywhere I go, I want people to bring me mead, you know, because I really want people to make some mead. And the other thing I want to talk about is, up until very recently, you know, my website is called bardicbrews.net, and it's really sort of focused on the brews part of Bardic Brews. And, you know, and there's a lot of information about how to make the mead and the historical context of it and, you know, some spiritual, you know, whatever, you know, rants or ramblings that I have. But lately I've wanted to sort of bring more into focus the bardic side of it and go more into the storytelling. And I'm also a musician and things like that. So I just did my first episode of a new podcast. And this new podcast has some music that I did, and it tells the story of from you know, from our Viking friends, from our heathen friends, of how Odin won the mead for gods and men. And I figured if I'm going to start telling stories about mead, that's got to be episode one right there.
Yeah.
And, so I just posted that about a week ago, not quite a week ago. So, you know, if people want to, it's only about 10 minutes long. So if people want to hear, you know, hear some music and, you know, hear me tell a story about mead, check it out. It's right up on bardicbrews.net.
Do we have that link, Dorian? Do we have a link for that? Do we have a link for that?
Yeah, I've been posting links, like, all throughout the show. Actually, I posted that one earlier, and I think I closed it. But if you scroll down just a little bit on his page, on the page I just posted, bardicbrews.net, you'll see the it's like embedded, the little player. So yeah, go ahead.
Awesome.
And hit
play.
Awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, so,
and we
so
are
yeah,
just about out.
Yeah, it's just you can go to bardicbrews.net. The most recent entry is talking about tonight's interview on your show, but the one right before that has the mead hall on it, so you can see it right there.
Yeah, and I'm
going to listen to it.
Yeah, and I'm gonna post that link on our fan page too, so everybody can get to it.
Sweet.
But this has been awesome. We're gonna have to have you back on again.
Oh, I'd love to.
I can.
I'll talk about mead for hours until people tell me to shut the hell up. So you know. Absolutely.
That's a lot. No, we would never tell you to shut up. I'm fascinated, and I'm really like, I'm so pleased that I learned something, and you're so cool in your approach, and I love that. That's really great.
Excellent.
And I really hope you will come back, because we're gonna make you come back.
All right. Well, you know. I don't know. Maybe
poking you on Facebook.
There you go. Well, yeah, I'm happy to do so. I love talking about it, and you know, check out bardicbrews.net, and most importantly, make your own mead, because it's amazing. I mean,
awesome.
nothing will lift a gathering quite like, you know, pouring some of your homebrewed mead into a drinking horn and passing it around the fire. You know, it just lifts everything. I can't even explain it. You know. I mean, because most of the time you think of people getting drunk and tipsy and the fight breaks out and all this stuff. I have never, ever had that happen with mead, not once. It always puts people in a great mood, and every time there's mead at a party or a gathering or, you know, a circle or whatever, it always elevates things. It's really cool. So anyway.
Having been a member of the SCA for 35 years, I know exactly what you're talking about.
There you go. So, yeah, everybody who's familiar with mead will tell you that story, you know.
Absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's my experience anyway. So.
Mine too. It's always a great storytelling accelerator. It's a love fest. I think it's amazing.
Absolutely.
So next time we have you on, we're going to have to have some of your music on too. So
there you
gonna
go.
Have some of that prepared.
Oh,
there you go.
Yeah, I can have some of that prepared. Yeah.
I can send it to you ahead of time or something like that. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Sure. About to get cut off because I just got told we got 90 seconds left. But thank you so much for coming on. And yeah, I am. I'm going to keep poking you every once in a while. Like, when are you coming back on? When are you coming back on? When are you coming back on?
Poke me whenever you want, baby. No, I'm just kidding.
Awesome. We love it. That's so cool.
And thank you so
James,
much for coming
thank
on.
Thank you so much. Yes, absolutely. You're an amazing guest. And I love this. This was great.
Excellent. I had a great time. Thanks so much.
All right.
Have a great
night.
Be well.
Bye. Oh, that
okay,
was
I
awesome.
I love him.
Yeah,
I love him. Can I just say I love him? He's awesome.
Yeah.
I love him. He's amazing.
everybody check out his bardic stuff and take to heart what he says, because I definitely was impressed by how he makes his mead. So, sis, give the blessing and let's go to sleep.
Yes. Amen. No, I'm just kidding. Wrong blessing. No, I love you guys. We are so thankful, you know, for the wealth, health, and happiness that the gods spread throughout the community. We are so thankful for the tight community. And go out. It's getting warmer. Go stick your feet in the grass. Go be free. We love you guys. And we will see
you
next week. With Talisman.
With Talisman.
Yep.
Night.
Love you guys.
Love you guys. Night.
Night.